Yeah, I said one.
I know, I'm going.
Oh, you're going.
Yep.
So am I talking first?
This is Bruce.
And Justin's not here.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, 3, 2. This is Bruce.
And this is Mike.
This is the break-in.
Sexy edition, part 2.
Hello,
Justin.
No. He moved on from whatever I lied and said he was at last week.
Did you say
Nicaragua?
Thank you.
Nicaragua?
I think he's over in Madagascar now. He took a slow boat over to Madagascar.
Wow.
So, Justin is touring the African world.
How slow is a slow boat?
I guess it just depends on how slow. Like,
and I don't think Nicaragua is in Africa.
Nope, that's definitely Central America. So yeah. It's a long trip because you think about it, you know, Central America, and you can't just cut through Africa. So it's like, do you go around the top where there's a lot of stuff going through, and you got to go through Saudi Arabia and the Red Sea, or you go around the bottom?
If you had a hovercraft, you could probably go over the desert. I don't know how effective a hovercraft would be in sand.
Neither do I. I feel like it would run out, or you push away and it just keep dropping you down.
Yeah, it would bury itself slowly.
That'd be pretty
funny. Come on, G.I. Joe.
in their sand exploits that they had.
Now, do you have any interest in seeing the new G.I. Joe movie?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
A lot, really?
I'm
interested, but not like, I'm not going to spend any money on it right off the bat, because the first one burned me so bad.
Yeah, but I watched it after the fact, and I guess my thing that my big reason I didn't want to watch it, well, I guess clearly we're talking, this is episode 48 we should talk about real quick.
Yeah, season 4, episode 8.
Season 4, episode 8, and it's going to be an entertainment kind of conversation today.
One where Chandler loses his virginity again.
Yeah.
You can do it.
G.I. Joe interests me more this time because it looks more like the G.I. Joe I grew up with as a kid.
Oh, yeah. It looks like a cartoon.
Versus these guys have suits that give them special ability. Like, I didn't understand the point of doing that. Like if you were trying to make that movie, I think about the way you talked about the Red Dawn, you know, remake. Like, is this for people who were cryogenically frozen, you know? Like, if somebody woke up, like, if let's say somebody grew up in the heart of the 80s watching Transformers and G.I. Joe, and they woke up in 07 and got to watch, you know, the first Transformers movie, they'd be like, oh, well, this is a lot like the cartoon because the characters are recognizable. Maybe not so much with Megatron because they did reshape him a little bit, but Megatron did constantly change throughout time. And you watch these G.I. Joes, and you're like, "What? These names are similar, but who the hell? What's?"
Yeah, the only character that looks like how they're supposed to was General Hawk.
Oh yeah, I guess.
I guess Snake. But Snake Eyes had lips.
Right.
That was weird. I recently the other one was on the first one was on cable, and I watched a few minutes of it. I'm like, yeah, I remember being upset by this.
But yeah, General Hawk was like really the only one that you're like, oh wow, that looks, you know, that's a good person for General Hawk. Actually,
I hope they brought him back.
I don't know actually, because the whole premise behind the new one is that like it's a retaliation because a lot of the Joes have been wiped out.
I don't know. We weren't supposed to talk about this.
I know,
this
but
was on the list.
But anyways, I'm excited to see it because it looks like G.I. Joe, and pretty much I love Bruce Willis. And so I'll watch him in just about anything. So,
yeah. He's really playing that old badass card, though.
He will play the shit out of it until it stops. So,
I'll pay for him.
But the big thing we wanted to talk about was a pretty big news for us comic book / cartoon people. Bruce Timms is parting ways with Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, it's really devastating because if you don't realize who Bruce Timms is, one, you should climb out of whatever.
I think it's Tim. You keep pluralizing, saying Timms.
It's not Timms? Is it Tim?
I think it's just Bruce Timm.
Okay, I apologize. Bruce Timms. He's pretty much the sole reason why Batman is stayed relevant, I think.
Well, he's the guy that came up with the look that's lasted. Right. I mean, like I was saying before, you know, I close my eyes and I imagine, you know, Batman, Superman, all them from video games, from cartoons, bed sheets, lunch boxes, anywhere but the live action movies. I see Bruce Timm's version.
Yeah. And that's the same way I did too. And, like even growing up, like, you know, getting older and like, and when I was in high school, it's like, I didn't feel stupid for watching Batman, the animated series, because I'm like, this cartoon was groundbreaking. Like they managed to make 30, like a non, you didn't have to follow a storyline. There was just like you could just do, they called them mini movies, you know, and there was never a big title sequence. It was just an opening with no talking or anything. And like, I mean, that the music from Danny Elfman and everything, I'm like, God, it was awesome.
They were like little Hitchcock films.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they were always kind of eerie, like they're very noir style.
Dark and gritty.
Yeah,
I don't know. Grainy, not gritty as like, oh, people are, you know, swearing at each other, women are getting raped. But gritty is in like, you could see the grain, you know, everything had a roughness to it. It was almost like, you know, it was a cartoon done on charcoal paper.
Right. It was awesome. And, you know, and Kevin, I mean, that's like saying, you know, and I know they've done a couple movies and stuff without Kevin Conroy doing the voice of Batman, but Kevin Conroy is my Batman. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I saw the Michael Keaton movies and, you know, I love the Christian Bale ones, but like, the voice of Batman has been personified by Kevin Conroy.
Yeah.
So it's like, is the storytelling still going to go the same route? Or, like, I don't know. It's just bizarre to think about.
If it's anything like the New 52, but animated, I'm going to be sad. And I'm going to, I don't know. I don't know what I'll do.
I know. It's, because even in the newer movies, even though, like, it's not, like, you know, we talk about Kevin Conroy doing the voice all the time and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
It still has a look to it because Bruce Timm has that look that he keeps everything semi-consistent with it. Like, and, you know, he's trying to take on different people's styles. You know, when he did Batman Under the Hood, he tried to, you know, they tried to incorporate the way Doug Monkey drew. Or, it, you know, when they did
Superman Elite.
Superman Elite, yeah. Well, there's another Doug Monkey. And then, you know, when they did Batman, The Dark Knight Returns, they made that look like Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns. But
that was, who was it, Peter Weller?
Yeah, that Peter Weller.
Was the Batman.
Which was cool, and that was an older voice and everything, and I could buy into that pretty easily.
But he's RoboCop. I mean, that's such a recognizable voice.
And I get that, but I think he played the role in that movie pretty well, though. But you still see the mixture of what Frank Miller did or David, the Magic, guy that did, yeah, that Kelly, guy.
Who did Year One?
Yeah, you can see a mixture of that with Bruce's style, not you clearly, but like Bruce's style. And if that's not recognizable, or like, did they carbon copy him, or are they saying, well, this has been the standard for so long, I think it's time for an update? Like, you know, like what are they going to do?
Well, as far as I know, he wasn't involved in the Young Justice cartoon, was he? I think he was involved in the Green Lantern cartoon.
He was, and I think that's why the Green Lantern cartoon was pretty solid, actually.
I liked it. You know, I made fun of it when it first came out. I'm not a big Green Lantern fan. But my,
we talked about this many times.
Yeah, my son is. So, I got invested in these characters. I'm gonna, you know, do something I make fun of Justin for doing. But I'm gonna go ahead and IMDb Bruce Timm and see if he was indeed involved in Young Justice.
Right.
Because watching that cartoon, you know, the designs are just a little different, and maybe that's what we have to look for. No, he was involved in no, he was not involved in that. Huh.
And maybe like his executive producing thing, maybe they're trying to tell him, you know, you can't keep doing this. You got to do something differently. Or maybe he's really just mad about the Green Lantern stuff because, like, they said it got 2 seasons, but it was only a season. There's only 26 episodes total. That's a season. And it was broken up over 2 years. And, like, Cartoon Network kind of shafted that process too, where they're like, oh, hey, we're starting back up. You get two episodes. Wait, you got to wait till January 1st. You got to see if the whole Mayan apocalypse things happen. Then yeah. It's coming back. Like, what the hell was that 3-month break for?
Yeah, I don't think Cartoon Network, I'm not sure who to blame, Warner Brothers or Cartoon Network, but those cartoons were handled poorly.
Yeah, and like Thundercats got screwed over the same way.
The Young Justice cartoon, it's almost unwatchable because it is so serialized. You have to watch every episode.
Because
the first season was about the team getting together, and hell, I don't know what season we're on now, but the episodes, before it was canceled, it's all about an alien invasion.
Right. And
is this?
Right. That's the weird thing. It jumps 5 years into the future after the first season. So I like the story, and there's a couple other guys that I work with who really enjoy the story, and I'm a big Teen Titans fan, so I'm invested into these characters clearly already.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're just like people are like, I don't know, they stopped production and we're not doing anything else, and it's like, oh, by the way, this is being canceled. And I feel like it's partially kind of Cartoon Network because they did the exact same thing to Jendy Tarnowski, the guy who created Samurai Jack and all those other ones.
Yeah.
He had a show called Symbionic Titan, which I've only watched a couple episodes of, but it is phenomenal. Like it's pretty cool, and like that kind of season. And then all of a sudden, it's like they just stopped. Like they're like, we're gonna show this How to Train Your Dragon cartoon a little bit more now. Is that okay? Like it's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So, and you set aside the Saturday morning block for the DC Nation and all this, that, and the other, and instantly cancel it. Like, what the hell is that?
I thought it was a great idea, and I like the little short interstitial cartoons. I think their Animal Man stuff is hilarious.
Oh, my God, the Animal Man thing. And they're bringing back Teen Titans because of those, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
We're getting the Beware the Batman cartoon, which who knows what that's going
to
be.
I'm not sure about that because Alfred's got pistols and they're using only Grant Morrison made up villains.
We'll have to see. And I don't know why they're doing that, but
Teen Titans, or Teen Titans Go or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
We've been there. We've done that, right?
Right.
I mean, all the fans of that show are now, 10 years older?
29. Like me.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, I love that show, though.
I don't know. And it's, for me, and I'm racist or whatever the word is for it, it's a little too manga-ish for me.
But that has a big pull on Cartoon Network. I think they're trying to find that balance and diversity in it.
Well, and the DC Nation should have been, a rotating shows. Like you said, when they took 3 months off, instead of running reruns, there should have been, 6 shows in production. And, it should have been, every 2 months they rotate out a new show.
Yeah, how great would it have been, even if they just did, 4 episodes, just to cover a month and say, hey, check out the exploits of Aquaman here. Oh, hey, check out the exploits of Hawkman here. Or something where they could have done what they used to do back in the day.
Something larger than just, we have 2 shows and we're going to run, 4 shorts.
I think we should take over Cartoon Network, Bruce, and the DC Nation.
And we couldn't do any worse.
Damn right.
But, who's the guy replacing Bruce Timm, and what's he going to have saying all this?
Right. Or is this going to be another person who's he's telling what needs to be, what they want to tell, not what he wants to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So is it another yes man? Because DC is clearly okay with hiring people like that. That's why people like Howard Mackey and, who's the guy who's writing... Who was the guy who wrote your book with Pachalo? I can't think of his name.
Scott Liddell.
Yeah, Scott Liddell. Are these guys who are just good to hop on board and be yes man? Are they the ones that are good?
This goes back to every conversation we've had about the New 52 since it came around. When is DC going to admit that they've made some mistakes? Now, I'm not saying they should just pick a month and go back to the previous version of everything. But at some point, DC has to come forward and say, yeah, that didn't work out.
We need 0 hour .2 to happen.
Something.
And to reset all the characters or, at least, have a reason there's a rift and, there's something to make it not, I don't want to say readable, because there's good books mixed in there. It's just like, it doesn't, it shouldn't all have to go to the bottom line. Like, people should be able to tell a story about a character and make it their own in some aspect while retaining, you know, an essence of a character. Like, I'm not saying, like, do what they, that was the, that's the other thing is, like, they made the Teen Titans unrecognizable. Why does Red Robin have feathers?
Yeah.
Like, that, I love the look
well,
of,
that,
like,
and then you look at something like Young Justice, there's, what, three versions of Robin now in that cartoon?
See, I don't even know.
And there's Nightwing, and then there's two Robins?
Like, it's, like, Tim Drake and Damian?
No, it's,
Jason Todd?
Yeah, hell, I don't know, man.
See, I don't know either.
Because they're never on screen at the same time, but you see them, and it's like Robin has grown up and become Nightwing, but now there's a new Robin.
Which
it's,
is Tim Drake.
It's like there's two Flashes, too. Like, there's Wally, and then there's Bart.
Hmm.
But Wally's still Kid Flash. I don't know. Like, the cartoon just got really complicated for no reason. And if they are canceling it due to ratings, well, then maybe they shouldn't have fucked with it and thrown it 5 years into the future and tripled their cast.
Yeah, they blew that thing up instantaneously.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering, like, there was, like, a three-part episodes where they're like, hey, here's Static Shock, and here's, you know, Apache Chief, and all these random weird-ass characters. We don't have enough characters already. We're just going to make some shit up.
Apache Chief, E&A Chuck.
Did you see the kid?
No.
He's Apache Chief.
That's funny.
And it's enough Chuck.
A nutchuck, I gotcha.
A nutchuck.
But we've come to our break in the conversation about this and on the podcast. But when we get back, we're going to it'll be a sit-down session with Chris Pritchard. So, we'll see you then.
What happens when you visit the most attractive website on the planet? You get Pritch-slapped. Pritch-slapped.com. The online home of attractive game comic artist Chris Pritchard. It's attractive.
Why, thank you.
Hey, welcome back. It's just Bruce here. Mike had to step out, but I did replace him with somebody much, much better and slightly more attractive. I got Chris Pritchard here on the line. He's going to talk to us about pretty much his life and his philosophy on boobies. So, lay it on us, Chris.
My philosophy on boobies is yum.
Well said. Well said. I don't think you're going to make any enemies there.
No.
No, you've kind of got a big deal going on here on one of the multiple interwebs. You got a Kickstarter.
Yep, my second attempt to get things going with my comic book Sansara right now. I'm doing a... pretty much the first half of the series, so I'm breaking the series into two trades. That'll be about 120 to 140 pages each. So, yeah, I'm asking for money to print those and to finish up the first one. Well, print and finish up the first one.
Yeah. Now, how much do you have done already?
How much of the book? I have the first issue done, so the first fifth done.
Okay.
And I'm working on the second fifth, because I still broke, you know, in writing them, I've broken them down into issues because that's originally how I planned them. So I still am thinking of them in those terms. I guess they'll probably be like chapters of the final trade. So I'm on the second chapter. And I've got all of that, you know, thumbed out, roughed out, and I've got the first couple pages totally done and, yeah, plugging along, trying to find time. When you're running a Kickstarter, your drawing time goes down dramatically.
It's a full-time job out there
promoting
yourself.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds like I've seen some Kickstarters, you know, where they do get funded, and then the writer / artist or whatever, they flake out. It sounds like you've really worked ahead. Like, you're literally just waiting for the money to come in, and then you're just going to hit the ground running. You've already got stuff nailed. You've already got it written. You just need time to actually put it on, what's on paper, because it's digital with you. So.
Yeah, it's digital, and yeah, it's just execution at this point is all I have to do, and that's part of what I've kind of buffered into the goal is to give me the time to finish up the first book, the first five chapters or whatever.
Well, as of recording this, you're at $4,102.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that farther than you made it last time?
Yeah, yeah. Last time I was just doing for the first issue, and the goal was 8,000, and I think I got to just under 3,000. I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was like 2,800 last time. So yeah, I most of it is just really generous friends and family that have jumped in and are making this happen. I've had more people that I don't know this time around so far, pitch in, you know, jump in or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Which is good. But, you know, once you get to like the second week, things die down, you know, there's the middle part that's like the dead zone where,
yeah,
where interest kind of wanes a little bit.
Now, what made you decide to go with Kickstarter versus, what's the other one, Indiegogo?
It's known. I actually was really thinking of going with Indiegogo the second time around.
Yeah.
And it's just, everybody knows what Kickstarter is. You go to a comic shop or you talk to people, you know, especially in comics, everybody knows what Kickstarter is. Whereas Indiegogo, you have to explain it more. It's just like Kickstarter, just a little different.
Yeah, and with Indiegogo, you're guaranteed the money, right? I mean, Kickstarter, you have to reach your goal. Indiegogo, you just cash out when you're done.
I think you can do it both ways with Indiegogo. If you do it that you keep whatever you get, even if you don't reach your goal, they take a little larger of a chunk.
Okay.
But yeah, that's the appealing thing about that. And they don't have to approve anything. Kickstarter is a little more limited. They want certain projects, creative projects. And they want to make sure you're not funding, you know, a vacation or something like that. But Indiegogo, you could fund vacations.
Wow. Now, yeah. I've seen things on Kickstarter. You know, obviously they're the success stories where people make millions and millions of dollars when they ask for a couple of thousand. And then I've seen things where people make, you know, $12 on Kickstarter. I mean, what's the magic formula? I mean, how do these people do it?
I have no idea. From researching myself, the ones that make a lot of money, they already have a fan base. I mean, they're already known from other works or, like, the newest giant Kickstarter was, Dresden Kodak? And that guy, he's been doing that book as a webcomic for a number of years now, so he's got a large following as it is. And, you know, more independent people, I think, have to just start with a lower goal and try to just trim things as much as possible. But those guys that...
Well, I've seen some of the big guys fail, too. I think Kurt Sig had a children's book he was trying to do called The Garlics, about a family of vampires. And I think he tried it three times and failed all three times.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he's a big name. I mean, it's Kurt Busiek, for God's sake. You know, Astro City and all that.
I'm not sure what was his goal.
I can't remember.
I don't know. It's such a big ball of wax. This time around, I actually have there's a couple of small marketing companies that I found that specialize in helping Kickstarters, or PR companies or whatever you want to call it. And I've got one of those that I'm working with this time around, and it's pretty much about the same as what I spent in advertising last time around, and advertising on my own didn't do jack. So I figured it's a better investment. And so far, I've been pleased with the numbers I've seen as far as video and page views and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little about the meat of the book?
The meat?
what's it about? Who are the main characters?
Main character is Sansara. She's a cybernetically enhanced assassin. And it takes place in a futuristic world. This world is pretty much a corporate run world. And one of the ways different corporations handle their disputes is through assassination.
Okay.
So, but with her, the interesting thing is her father actually lives on, his persona lives on in her robot assistant. And is part of how she got into the whole corporate assassination thing in the first place. But that takes place in issue one, which is for free. It's posted on my website, samsaracomic.com.
I have the physical copy right here in front of me. I think I bought this from you.
Oh, that's
at Gym City?
That's the mini. This actually happened. Like, I did this illustration 3 years ago for a contest, and I just, the contest was very general, just a strong female. The character so much, I made a little mini comic. I just thought that would be a cool thing to do to sell with the print. And people like the comic, and I like the idea that kind of came out of that. So, I decided to make the larger story, and I'm having fun with it. I was actually surprised when I started thumbing out the second issue. I was like, this is actually not bad.
You surprised yourself.
Yeah. Cause the first issue is pretty much kind of like set up, you know?
Now, is she Native American or Indonesian or?
Well, it's more of a, I really kind of, she's just like homogenous. There's no real necessarily races on this, on the world.
I'm seeing like feathers, but
yeah, that was just like,
her nose is very strong and
yeah. She had a little, well, the contest was actually at theartorder.com, and it was in conjunction with, what's her name? Veronica. I forget. She's called the Perfect Muse, and she does a lot of, she owns a gallery in Chicago. She does a lot of modeling and pictures that she sells. If you just search the Perfect Muse, you'll find her stuff.
Yeah, I see her name here. I won't pronounce it though. Veronica.
yeah,
she's Russian or something. I don't know.
Smith. No, it's not Smith. Or Jackson or Johnson or something.
Not English action.
But yes, she was part of the contest was using pictures that she provided as kind of inspiration for your character. So kind of her features are based off Veronica. And the other stuff was just stuff, details that I added to the character when I did the original piece, like feathers and, you know, the glowing parts, just kind of cyberpunkish stuff that I just threw in there. And I modified a little bit.
The dress is beautiful. I mean, all these different textures and such in there. I've been trying to work on a little something for you, and there's just so much going on with her character. You know, she's got the one sleeve, and like I said, the feathers, and then the cybernetics and the glowing tattoo. That's a ingenious design. I mean, there's no boring part of her.
Thanks. I did change a few things though, like the feather stuff around her neck.
Right. I saw that.
I simplified that because I'm like, this is just like from different angles and just a little more complex than I wanted. I wanted to simplify that a little bit. But yeah, the sleeve and stuff. Those are backstory things too that I'll be exploring or telling the story of as the series goes on.
Well, I respect the fact that it's not just cheesecake either.
Yeah.
She's clearly not a weak-willed little submissive girl, or, you know, she's not Vamprella out there sexing her way through life.
Yeah. I've always been, I mean, I like looking at all the, you know, your typical female character drawings with aggrandized features. But myself, I like to draw more, I don't know, realistic or natural females. But, and that's really one thing that I like as a storyteller is just, I want to make my characters more, human and relatable and complex and not just, one main facet to who they are.
Right. And the idea of the father living along, living on in the little floating orb is, that's going to lead to some interesting story developments.
Yeah, it was just a fun idea when I made the mini that came, I don't even know how it came to be, but yeah, it makes for some nice things as the story goes on, some nice interactions, and, you know, I mean, it's buddy cop in some ways.
Yeah. But also, he has to be quite protective of her.
Yeah.
Not just as she has daughter, but he's dead.
Yeah.
So he knows how dangerous this can be.
Yeah. Well, he actually wasn't necessarily, he wasn't actually a corporate assassin, but that's all backstory type stuff too.
Oh, you're hiding it from us.
Yes. He was just kind of more of a, I mean, Han Solo-esque kind of guy. runs that's Walt Johnson.
The vest from.
Yeah, I should have given her like the Han Solo blaster.
Your gun design's amazing because it's a different gun almost, and every time she shoots somebody, I mean you've got the gun here. I'm looking at your Kickstarter, and then I'm flipping through this book here, and so you just make up these gun designs. You just pull that out of the ether.
For the mini comic, I used the one that I gave her in the original illustration.
Yeah.
But as I've developed the story, I actually I wanted like a revolver based design, and I think Dexter was heavily influenced because when I was kind of concepting stuff, I was reading the Dark Tower series of Stephen King.
Yeah.
So I did all kinds of sketches and ideas on revolvers, and then I came up with this the one that you see on the Kickstarter page that is overly complex in some ways, like drawing some angles is just like, what the hell is going on here? But I made a 3D model that I use as reference so that I can try to get those angles right.
So for people who do contribute to this, let them know what will be in book one. Like what do we get for book one? You said, it's what, 120 pages?
It'll be 120 to 140, because as I go, I have all the issues, chapters, whatever, written through probably almost the fourth one, but as I go through and draw them, as I get to that part, I tweak things, you know. I'll say, this page is meaningless filler, or, you know, I'll cut some panels, or I'll add a few panels, because I feel there needs to be a little more there.
You need to adjust pacing sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be 100, it'll definitely be 120, and, you know, might be as much as 140. There is actually, I think, the end of the third chapter, I go on for a number of pages, and I have a bunch of notes. I was just looking at this the other day. They're like, do we need this? You know. So,
How much of the backstory do you share in those 120 pages?
In this first part, probably, I go back and forth a lot. There's a lot of flashback to, there's now and then going back to when her father died, how she got into the whole security / corporate assassination stuff. And so we're going back and forth, a lot. And I don't know if in the first book we really find a lot of the details about, like, her arms and things like that, her, you know, the costume things we were talking about, but definitely find out how she becomes a corporate assassin and some of the relationships that come from a few of her first jobs that she had that are pretty interesting, I think. But
now, when you get the first one funded, if that goes well, if everything gets out there, and then you're not able to do a second one, will you feel satisfied with the story you've told in book one? So that's something I struggle with in my own work. You know, if I only do this one issue, is this enough of the story? Do I feel confident with that?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, I'll feel satisfied that I did my best and gave it my all. And, you know, if it doesn't take off and have to shift gears for whatever reason and can't finish the second book, you know, I might just put it out there in prose form, you know, just to finish the story. Because it really is a solid story with a beginning, middle, and end. So if book two isn't made, you know, we'll be kind of in the middle of the main story. I'll feel like finishing in some way. But there's enough meat there that, trying to think where it leaves off at the end of book one now. I threw in a lot of stuff. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that goes on in the story. And with all the going back in time and coming forward, I originally was going to do this like a webcomic, just have the main story and what is the now happen. But then I realized that there was so much to learn about her character and what made her who she is that there needed to be a whole second aspect of going back in time and telling that. Otherwise, it just wouldn't have the depth that I felt it needed.
I completely understand. One of the things I always think of when dealing with limited page counts and, you know, that fear of, will they come back for more, is the Robert Kirkman book, Invincible. I think it's in issue 10, and like Invincible fights his dad, and his dad leaves the planet. I remember reading an interview with him where Kirkman wanted to hold back and maybe do that around issue 20 or so. And Jim Valentino, the publisher at the time, told him, your book's not going to last that long. You'd need to do everything you want to do now while people are still buying it. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's what pushed the book over the edge and people started paying more attention.
Yeah.
I mean, you're hesitant to throw it all out there in one big, you know, pile and say that this is my great creation. You know, you want to not string people along so much, but you want to pace it out and make them enjoy it. And, you know, you want to share the love that you've put into something. But there's always the fear that if you don't give them everything they want, will they not come back?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. It's hard to say. I kind of struggled with whether or not I wanted to make the Kickstarter for the whole shebang, you know.
Yeah.
And not break it into two books, but it would have. I wanted to keep it down to a goal that I thought was attainable, and it would have had to be, you know, probably more like 15,000 for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because it's detailed. When I first started trying to find a style for how I wanted to draw this, I tried to be more line art and keep it a little simple because I knew, I mean, time's an issue.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just paint more. It's more naturally what I wanted, what I felt was right. So, and it takes a while. It's definitely not a quick process the way.
No, I don't think people appreciate that sometimes. I mean, you spend 30 seconds looking at a panel on a comic book.
Yeah.
You don't realize somebody spent, you know, 2 hours drawing that panel.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think that too when I'm, or I regularly think that too when I'm reading comics. I'm like, man, how fast am I going through this? Because, you know, there are some books where you stop and you look at the art. There's some pages that you stop and you look at the art a little more. You know, you drink it in a little more. But a lot of times I do find myself just like I'm reading it and I'm going through it pretty fast. And compared to the amount of effort put into it, like I feel like I should be going slower just to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To appreciate the time put into it.
Yeah.
I'm always terrified of that. But at the same time, I think about it, and that pushes me. You know, like I limit the amount of time I allow myself to spend on things because I know that no one's going to sit there and stare at it like I'm sitting there staring at it. Now, are there any tricks or anything you're using to try to speed yourself up? Because you went from an $8,000 goal on one issue, now you're doing what, 5 issues for $9,000? So you had to find some way there to trim some time.
Well, it's mainly just a cost thing. One thing that I learned from the first time around was, I made a mistake in estimating my goal because I basically, made the assumption that all my reward levels would be, would be taken, and I would have to actually purchase all the different items, to fulfill the rewards. So that kind of beefed up the amount for the first Kickstarter. I probably could have had it at, you know, a few thousand dollars less. At the same time, it's weird. The printing cost for a single floppy is actually, I don't know, you seem to get more bang for your buck when you're doing a trade.
Yeah.
So that is really those are the two main issues. Like I really, try to squeeze, my cost estimates and realize that, you know, not all the higher tier rewards are going to actually be taken. So I don't need to have those hard in the goal amount. And then the other thing is just the trade, you know, it's really not that, that much, different. I should look at the quotes before I make that statement, but you know, printing cost, it's like once it's running, I don't know.
No, you're completely right. Like when I did the Clobber books, you know, it was like $2 per issue for me to get it printed. But then, you know, you do the trade and it's $7. That's all 5 issues.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're definitely saving money. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense.
No.
But you're saving money. And I think, much like the way people don't understand how much time you put into a panel, I don't think people understand how much you pay to get these things printed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've been to the cons, you're trying to sell stuff, and people are like, I don't know. And you can see it in their eyes where they're thinking, that costs too much. You know, is this worth the money? And I feel like doing a breakdown, saying, you know, here's the hours I put into it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how much it costs for this.
That's the big thing. Like, people, I think they understand the printing, but I found that a lot of times people feel like that's the only thing they should have to pay for, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it's, I don't know. I think there's an overall kind of lack of appreciation for the amount of effort that goes into something. I mean, you'll see this on boards where, message boards where people are, you know, an illustration, or whether it's for, you know, gaming or comic books, and, you know, people are making them offers for, like, oh, back end payment that, you know, will never materialize most likely, or, you know, very, very little money. And it's, I just think there's an overall lack of appreciation for
it. There is, definitely. There have been so many people that have approached me here lately and wanting to know, what would I do for this amount of money? What would I do for this amount of money? You know, it's like, I can give you like $20 a page. I'm like, yeah, that would give you like one panel a page. That's all you're getting. I can't do this for that. And one guy recently tried the deferred payment thing on me, and I said, you know, I can sit at home and draw my own comics and not get paid. Why should I draw yours and not get paid?
Mm-hmm.
People just don't have a response for that. They don't understand the time that goes into it.
Yeah.
My wife sells jewelry on the side, like Premier Jewelry stuff. You know, they have like jewelry parties and whatever. And she can go out and spend, you know, 4 hours and come home with $600-$700. You know, I go to a convention after spending, you know, 6 months drawing something, and then you're saving that money to get it printed, and I go out and I make, you know, $200, and I'm tickled shitless.
Mm-hmm.
it doesn't make any sense. You know, she spent 4 hours, $700, and spending like 2 months, and after paying for printing and everything, I'm making like $75. Like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah,
I should be selling knives instead of comics.
Ninja stars. That's
custom ninja star. I will draw your face on a ninja star for $35.
I would buy that.
I'm going to look into that.
Although, yeah, most cons might frown upon
that. Yeah, you're making a box of ninja stars in here?
They're not sharpened. They're not real, right? They're rubber, right?
These are real. Functioning ninja stuff. Now, do you have any conventions or anything lined up? Like, do you have some sort of like live interaction tied into your Kickstarter? Like, can people donate to your Kickstarter in front of you at a convention and get like a sketch or something? I mean,
no. I had a launch event at Pack Rat Comics in Hilliard last Saturday.
Yeah, how did it go?
It went all right. I mean, there's a lot of people there playing games. I had three other artists were nice enough to come out, Heather Breckel, Mason Easley, and Nate Lovett. But, yeah, their store is separated. Like, they have a game store, and then next door is the comic store. I went over, and I had a little 10 people could put their names in, and I, every 20, 30 minutes, drew a few out, gave shirts and prints away and stuff like that. And people enjoyed free stuff, but but nobody, you know, and a few people were kind of interested, but it's not like we really sold a lot of sketches or anything. But I don't have any conventions coming up before the Kickstarter is over.
Now, I saw you at Gym City walking around.
Yeah, and I should have been passing out my postcards for them. But I'm such a dud. Yeah, sometimes I'm an airhead. I went there, I'm like, okay, I'm talking to Bruce, I'm talking to Nate, I want to touch base and see these guys I haven't seen in a while. And then I left there and I'm like, wait, I have like 100 postcards for this event. I've just been throwing at people. Anyway.
Well, we're gonna need to wrap it up now.
Okay, yeah, it's been a while. We've been talking for a while.
No, that's perfectly fine. We'll have you back on again. You get 21 days as of this recording, and I've donated some money, and I've been, you know, sharing.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
That. I've done what I can, and I will continue to do more. And you know, if there's anything you need, you know, I can give you this segment separate. You can put it up on your website.
I'll just link to you guys' site when you get it up.
Okay. Well, good luck, Chris, and like I said, we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
See, you always enough to get observed when we're going to tag off with us. Well, Creative Commoners is the most forward-thinking podcast around. Listen to host Chris Armstrong, Corey Bishop, and Allison Dixon as they discuss ideas that are anything but common. CreativeCommoners.net.
We're back.
Yep, here we are to say our so longs and farewells. One thing to add back in with the DC cartoons and everything being cut down and this, that, and the other, and, you know, DC cartoons have managed to stay pretty relevant for the most part. And, you know, people get very upset about that, but nobody's, I don't hear people screaming out in outrage about, oh, I can't believe that Avengers the Earth Mightiest Heroes is done, or...
I think Marvel sneaks in under the radar sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think there's always been a DC cartoon out there since we've been in high school.
Right.
And the Marvel stuff, I guess there's kind of always been one of them or another, but most of the time they're crap, so we don't expect much out of them. Like the X-Men cartoon in the 90s.
Right.
That's probably one of the worst cartoons ever produced.
But people remember it so well.
They like, do, because my wife, like, that was her into the X-Men.
Right.
Like, she thought, oh, you know, Gambit and Jubilee are, you know, their romantic interests, and that's where Gambit first got his black and red eyes from, was the cartoon.
Gambit and Rogue, actually.
No, in the cartoon, it was Gambit was hitting on Jubilee in her first appearance at the mall.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So I remember my wife read, and it was Rogue and Gambit, and she's like, well, this is different. No.
Hmm.
So,
see, I always liked the X-Men cartoon from the 90s, though.
It's so poorly done. Like, the voices don't match up sometimes. And I remember this scene, like, where Magneto's mouth, like, his mouth just disappears. Or they did a lot of, like, really cheap animation where,
right.
Like, they used the same shots of helicopters exploding, like, four or five times.
That's funny.
And then there were things like, you know, Wolverine has his claws, but he's not about to cut anybody.
Yeah, like, that was always kind of weird. And
like I'm going to cut this rope and a chandelier is going to fall on you. I'm the best there is at what I do.
Watching through it, there, especially towards the end, there's some really weird stuff that happens in that. You know, and they try to keep it consistent with the comic too, which was really funny. Yeah. Like, you know, like they do the Phalanx coming in, and they have kind of an Age of Apocalypse thing.
Yeah, like Cable shows up. And...
Right. There are some good episodes that stand out, but I guess you know,
well, not just that cartoon. I don't want to just talk about that cartoon.
Right. But X-Men Evolution and, like, but there, like, the Avengers cartoon from the 90s, that's awful. The Iron Man cartoon from the 90s, God, that's awful.
Yeah.
Like, Tony Stark with that hair and whatever the hell was going on with him, like, it was really weird.
Well, you mentioned the Avengers or Mighty Heroes. Tony Stark in that looks like he's wearing mascara.
Right.
Like, he's got Tony, you know, or something. He's got great, he's black under his eyes.
And the guy is really trying to sound like Robert Downey Jr. too. Like, he's got like a lighter tone, but he really tries to sound like Robert Downey.
Yeah, Black Nick Fury in there.
Yeah,
who gets his gray streak in the first episode. I mean, I've seen these. You know, my son was slightly interested in them, but he's turned more now to the Superhero Squad.
Right.
Which those are just, I don't know,
hilarious.
Kind of, but at the same time, embarrassing.
Really?
It's like they're funny, and I feel bad for laughing. Because I can only imagine, like, my son's going to grow up and think, you know, MODOK is the shit. Because he's the villain in every episode.
I did see an episode where Stan Lee was a superhero, and he was like the old-timer superhero or whatever.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. That's, he's like the mayor of the town, right, or something?
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
I don't know. But what other, have you seen any of Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon?
So, I have not. But my son's watched a bunch of them because we watched the Amazing Spider-Man movie, and he likes Spider-Man. He thinks it's pretty cool. So I haven't really had a chance to watch a lot of it, but he seems to like it.
The cartoon, it's weird. It's different.
Hmm.
Like Spider-Man just kind of, you know, like things will pause and he'll talk to you, the viewer. Or like they had almost Family Guy moments where he'll mention something and then it cuts to that.
That's really weird. So it's like Family Guy and Deadpool in a toned-down version?
It would actually make more sense if it was a Deadpool comic.
Right.
Then, like, he's in high school, and Agent Coulson is the principal.
Hmm.
And like the other students there, it's like Power Man, Iron Fist, and White Tiger, and Nova, that new Nova kid.
Yeah, you're pretty salty about this too, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're not going to get into your love of DNA and where the Guardians of the Galaxy have headed. We'll just completely ignore that. Like, it's not happening right
now. Iron Man's weird, because their Iron Man has got, like, this surfer dude voice, you know? And he's like, you got to chill out, man. Just kind of feel the villains coming at us.
That's weird.
You know, it's odd, and
I think maybe Bruce Timm will go to Marvel and get some consistency going, though. Maybe that's the one thing we can actually look forward to.
Well, it's something you said, like, at the beginning of this, you know, we aren't talking about DC. Now, you steered it more towards the Marvel. You steered it more towards the cartoons, but we haven't talked about Marvel, the comics, in a while either. Because I don't think either me, you, or Justin are really reading Marvel anymore.
I think... I don't, like, I never, like, I got way too invested into the DC universe. Like, I just, like, I don't know, something about Green Lantern Rebirth, when I started reading this, I wanted to know these other situations that happened, like Crisis on Infinite Earth. I wanted to read that, I wanted to experience that. And even, like, Zero Hour, and this stuff, like, I'm like, who the hell's Parallax? I want to know what the hell this is all about, you know, and I cared, and I cared about, like, reading the stuff that led up to Infinite Crisis, and I'm like, I don't know who Ted Kord is, but I'm really sad he's dead now because he seems pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just the time in my life or whatever, but those characters became essential to wanting to read and know about stuff. So
I've jumped back and forth off of the Marvel books. Like, I was a huge fan of Hickman's run on Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when he left and Fraction came on, I thought, okay, this is a good time for me to leave.
Right.
Because even towards the end of Hickman's run, where it felt like he was being forced to bring everything together, you know, so everything would pay off.
Oh, yeah, Johnny's got to die, and now we're going to bring him back. And
Yeah, then, hey, there's a spinoff book about the kids, but we're going to say it's not essential reading, but shit happens in it that you need to know about if you're going to read Fantastic Four.
Right.
I don't know, I got really convoluted towards the end, and... I've been a huge X-Factor fan for years, as long as Peter David's involved. And I lost interest in that because it just seemed like there was no momentum. Like, things would happen, but no one would progress anywhere. It was like a sitcom of comics.
Right.
You know, it's every week, it's these crazy mutant detectives. What are they going to do this week? It doesn't matter because it's going to get reset at the end.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that seems, and, you know, I know we're running long in our goodbyes here, but at the same point in time, like, it's kind of relevant because it's like, is Peter David getting to do what he wants to do? Because anytime it seems like he could probably even try to build momentum, it's like, oh, hey, there's another X event coming along.
Yeah.
And it's like, so now he's got to do at least 5 or 6 tie-in issues with that. And, ooh, you know, it's like, God, just let a dude tell a story without Brian Bendis getting in the way of
it.
Like, let somebody tell a story without, you know, trying to worry about how Geoff Johns is going to do his Justice League run. Like, yeah. I mean, you know me, I like Geoff Johns, but at the same point in time, you know, I want to read a Swamp Thing book where it's not going to be like, oh, how is he being affected by this? And, you know, that's not partially true, but at the same point in time, it is that way, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And now he's doing your book, The Guardians of the Galaxy, Bendis is, and
Yeah.
I don't know where these things are.
It's so weird to think that, you know, like a year ago or 6 months ago or whatever, I envied these guys. And to look at it now, I almost feel sorry for them.
Right.
Yeah, because of all, you know, people coming forward saying, you know, I refuse to work on this, or I was told to do this and I don't agree with it, or, you know, people leaving books, and it's just, it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, am I paying more attention to that stuff, or is it more public now?
I think it's more public now. I mean, social. I mean, like you said, you know, you said several times, when something happens, you know about it in 30 seconds on the internet.
Yeah.
Like hell. I think the stupid thing is like they're giving away book endings before the book like even comes out. Like when Johnny died in Fantastic Four and Hickman's run, you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, there's no surprise.
You knew it was going
to
happen.
Maybe that's one of the reasons that I like to pick up the little independent books.
Right. Because they don't get ruined.
Yeah, like, no one ruined Profit for me.
No, not at all. You don't ruin, You know who spoiled Prophet's ending for me? Me. I read it and I was, well, I haven't read the ending, but I'm just like, every page was just like something new and different. Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We're running a long
goodbye. We're grumpy old men, and we need to get to sleep.
So.
BruceOHughes.com. You can go to Facebook and find Michael T. Adams II, Justin Wasson. Justin also has a separate Facebook page for his art, of Justin Wasson Art.
Yep.
Chris Pritchard, show him some love. We're on Twitter as The Break-Ins. We're on Facebook as The Break-Ins. We're all over the internet.
We're there.
Yeah.
And we're watching you.
Always. And next convention for us will be Derby. That's in June, I think.
Mm-hmm. End of June, right?
Yeah, and we're going to try to keep this like every 2 weeks, a new podcast thing, if not a little sooner.
Yep.
Depending on special events or whatever. But I don't know. You're with us or against us?
Better be with us, because you're getting bulldozed if not.
Hell yeah.
So see you there, and Justin will be back hopefully next time. So.
Until then, good day. Show you.